Hey, it's Sunny. Just as a heads up, if you're listening to this, you're listening on the iTunes feed, go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com, and listen to us there. We've got special bonus episodes exclusive to the Patreon forever at subbeacon.com. We're going to start doing Hawkeye next week on Monday, on the Monday that's coming up, Monday the, whatever that is, the 6th, Monday the 6th, is that right? We'll have the first two episodes of Hawkeye. And then we'll do, I think, maybe two episodes a week after that. What do we got? What else do we have? We have a great bonus episode on Mulholland Drive. Vic explaining Mulholland Drive. Fantastic. New episode at the Patreon goes up on Friday. We're going to be talking about House of Gucci. Get some House of Gucci action in there. So that'll be fun. But yeah, listen to this episode. It's about Red Notice, the movie that is seen by as many people as I can count and will be remembered by none of them. So have fun with this episode. We'll see you over at Patreon at subbeacon.com.
I want you to help me catch the most wanted art thief in the world, the Bishop.
Hello, boys. It's so nice to finally meet you in person.
She set me up, framed me.
A few clever keystrokes and poof. Bye-bye, Agent John Hartley.
She's gonna steal Cleopatra's eggs. They're priceless.
If we catch her together, I can clear my name.
And I'll help you become the number one thief in the world again.
Lift with your neck. Even if I did partner up with you, you'd still only have one brain.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Sub Beacon. I'm Victor Manis, along with Jonathan V. Lass and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Sub Beacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Sub Beacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. The holidays are just around the corner. It's never too early to order. Order now. Gentlemen, how are we? JVL, what is going on?
Big decisions. Big decisions have to be made in the last household. Oof. I need your help, gentlemen, and I need
that's what we're here
your
for.
Help, gentle readers,
listeners,
whatever. So, a long postponed trip that my wife, my lovely wife, was going to take 2 years ago, pre-COVID, is finally happening.
Oh no,
she's going on a pilgrimage to the Holy Land.
Oh.
She, because they had so many people drop out of this thing,
yes.
They had a spot open up and she's taking Flash.
Oh my goodness.
Flash is going to go and he's going to skip stones on the Sea of Galilee and, you know, throw, maybe play some catch on the road
to Negev
Yosemite.
Desert.
Who could, anyway, but the point is, none of that's important. What's important is that they are leaving on Thanksgiving night. Which means that all of our Thanksgiving food plans, normally catered by Wegmans, are up in the air. And anything is possible. Because we're not going to, like, do a whole Thanksgiving dinner when we got to, like, get them off to the airport and all that. So I don't know what we should do. Part of me thinks Thanksgiving of pies, where it's pizza and then pecan and pumpkin, you know, just all pie things. Part of me thinks we could do Sheets Thanksgiving.
Go to Sheetz Sheets.
That's right. Go to Sheetz for Thanksgiving. Get some cheese curds, some fried mac and cheese. Get Flash one of those satchels full of hamburgers and have him eat those before he gets on an 18-hour flight to the Middle East. Because that'll be great.
I was about to say, if you can avoid going to the bathroom like that on an airplane.
Are they flying out of Dulles?
Actually, out of Reagan.
Let me guess. To like
are they
New
going
York?
Up to New York? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I was gonna say, you can't fly. There's no direct.
There's no
DCA to Jerusalem flight.
That's right. So what should we do? Here's my question. I put it to you boys. What would you do? Because there is again no point in doing Thanksgiving dinners when it's going to be, you know, a week of just me with the three little kids.
Question.
None of them eat Thanksgiving food.
So your concern here is you don't want leftovers.
Not leftovers when I will be the only person in the house who eats Thanksgiving food.
Gotcha.
Plus, I don't want the hassle of like making it a thing because we don't have, you know, there's not going to be like a Thanksgiving supper or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Question.
Yeah.
What time will they leave the house?
I think we'll probably leave the house by 5.
Oh, so it's like a really late night flight.
Yeah, it's a red eye. 8 p.m.
Oh, okay. You could still do, you could front load a Thanksgiving meal if you wanted to, like you, everybody ate at noon if you felt like it. If other people in your family felt like, you know what, I want that turkey. It's once a year. Let's just have it at noon. No. Then you have an early Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah, Vic, you're thinking inside the box. This is my one Thanksgiving ever to do something totally crazy.
Like you don't want to do Thanksgiving.
So we should do something nuts. What should that be?
You should do regular Thanksgiving, full size, for like extended family, and then throw away the leftovers.
Oh, you're killing me.
Just waste them. Just have a big, just have a big actual, like, go get one of the metal drums.
You're hurting Vic.
From the alley.
That's a sin. You know, it's such a greater sin than seeing a movie for
free. It's like the Simpsons episode where they're like the trend sweeping the land, wasting food, and it's just pictures of people pouring. That's what you should do. That's what you should do. No, the real answer here is mac and cheese medley.
Oh.
You should create a series of high class mac and cheese dishes, but little ones.
Truffle oil mac and cheese.
Truffle oil, lobster mac and cheese,
bacon
mac and cheese, you know, gouda melted on top mac and cheese.
The gouda melted cheese.
Goat cheese mac and cheese. You should do 17 different kinds of mac and cheese and then rank them.
Is that a consensus favorite in your house, mac and cheese?
Not Sonny's
house. I mean JVL's.
Everybody except for Flash will eat it.
Yeah,
dish aside from Chick-fil-A or Wendy's nuggets, which all 6 people in my house will eat.
Right,
literally that's nothing.
Similar.
So well, I have girls who don't eat pizza.
My son is not a mac and cheese guy.
Flash doesn't eat mac and cheese?
Flash
doesn't
eat pasta.
How can children not eat mac and cheese?
I know, it's weird.
Any form of pasta, he won't do it. Spaghetti.
That's bizarre.
Spaghetti with what?
Ravioli.
Wow. Is it a texture thing?
Texture.
I don't know. He's Flash thing. Who could say? But I like this idea of mac and cheese. The problem is I kind of want something that I can buy elsewhere.
Flash will not have anything to eat for Thanksgiving, is what you're saying.
That's good. You know, he's going to... Because, boy, let me tell you, he's going to be... in for all sorts of delights when he gets over there for
absolutely.
Middle Eastern food.
Absolutely. I am fascinated to find out how that works out. He will have to.
Like
all sorts of shawarma. Hello, shawarma. He will fall in love whether he wants to or not with shawarma. Here's my thing, though.
Fastos is going to see him and start crying.
Fastos. Don't bring up that movie ever again. There is something to be said, by the way. I tried to eat very little before a flight, so that might not be a bad idea for him because I've done that. I probably mentioned on the show once where, you know, I had to get on a flight from D.C. to San Francisco, and the night before we had Non and Beyond because we closed the magazine late.
Oh.
Remember Non and Beyond? That's not even good Indian, right? That's like bad Indian. And I got up in the middle of the flight. You weren't even allowed to get up. And I said,
Did they have to make an emergency landing? They thought that terrorist had done something inside one of the lavatories.
I was expecting.
He's got a bomb in his head.
It's a bomb in his pants. So I expected an air marshal to stop me.
There's a chemical or biological weapon going off in the lab right now.
I was sweating. I was having cold sweats. And so I worked my way down to the bathroom and there was a lock and the flight attendant at that very moment, the light went off. And so he lifted and I went in and it was great because it was the first flight in the morning. So it was clean. I just sat down.
Those poor people who sat next to it.
It was about 5 or 10 minutes later, like I gathered my senses and realized I was still in the bathroom. You know how you can't just get up. You know, I don't know. And always, that's why I could never do the military where you like sit down, push, and then you get up. I need time to like get things back to normal and to get back to my senses. And by that time,
you go to a trance state.
I do, you do, because, you know, everything needs to get back to normal, and then you finally sort of, you know, like, oh, where am I? Oh, because like you're no longer woozy. And I opened the door, and that line was like to the middle of the cabin, And the guy had this look on his face, like he just had this terrible look on his. I'm like, sorry.
Well, he knows. He knows what's, he knows what's in store for him.
A little non and beyond action.
He knows what you've done in there. It's like the bathroom in Trainspotting.
You know what? There was a nun in there before me.
Right. That's right. That's
there
right,
was it. There was somebody else, not me.
I blame it. She must have had the Vindaloo.
Sorry.
Who had the Vindaloo?
JBL, I told you, I must have told you guys my story about going to Israel.
Yeah, you did.
I must have.
Oh, getting sick, right?
Yeah.
Well, you
yeah.
took
well, not,
the pill.
Not really
you
getting
took a medication.
Sin, but
you
yeah,
took
yeah.
a medication.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I got there and I ate one meal and immediately my stomach was just like, all of this has to get out right now. You gotta get. And the guy who was running the trip, like, apparently this is like a fairly regular thing. So,
well, Father Landry
like
can just do an
exorcism or whatever.
Yeah, Father Landry can just do an exorcism if that happens to Flash. I'm not
so
worried.
Are you? So is it? It's a Catholic trip to Israel.
Yeah, it is.
To go see the Jewish state. It's got a bunch of Catholics running around.
Well, you know, I don't want to spoil the surprise for you. But there is some Catholic stuff that happened in that region of the world.
Well, I don't know. Let's
anyway, whatever. Sonny, how are you, buddy?
I'm fine. I'm perfectly fine. I'm sitting here. I have three Coors Lights in the room with me, and as I was bringing them in, Beth was like, "Well, what if you can't just bring those in there? What if the mountains don't turn not blue anymore?" And I was like, "You know what? That's a good point." So I got a whole cooler.
Oh, look at that.
Filled it with ice stuff for my three Coors Lights. We're going to get rid of these beers one of these days.
You're actually going to open that up and it's going to be the Duke's head in it.
Very good. It's like that's like cold. Yeah. That's cold filtered. Then that's what they call it. It's chill
cold,
filtered. It's so it's chill filtered.
Lagered, filtered, yeah, cold lagered, cold filtered, cold packaged. The mountains are very blue.
Very nice.
So anyway, like that's all that's going on with me. I am currently in the midst of buying an exceptionally large number of 4K Blu-rays because Amazon has like discounted all of the prices on things that I like. Amazon keeps sending me alerts. It's like, hey, this movie's only $10, and I'm like, okay. If you insist,
Merry Christmas to you.
If you insist,
what?
Amazon,
what are you
getting?
Okay, so give us a little tease here. What are you getting?
What I mean, I like it's not even stuff I'm really into.
Oh my god,
it's like Green Knight. The Green Knight was on the 4K Steelbook. I was like, yes, I would like that. I would like that. I was like, okay, I actually do want to get this. Was Snatch Guy Ritchie movie
great
on 4K,
movie.
Which I did not upgrade from DVD. I have like a DVD from 2001. Of Snatch.
Did you get it on the used at Hollywood Video?
No. I probably bought it for like $30 from Barnes and Noble.
How is the quality of that now? If you pop it in the 2001, do you notice?
Yes, Vic. I'm not a savage. I can see. You know? I have eyes.
It's like if you ever see the old, like when they show you old sports clips from like the 90s or the early 2000s, and it looks so bad, and then you think to yourself, I don't remember it being that bad.
It's a different time.
It's just me.
It was a different time.
Or it's just the quality fades. I don't know.
Snatch
is great. Dennis Farina at his best.
Snatch is great. I'm excited to rewatch it. I haven't watched it in a while. But it's going to be great on 4K. I'm
Brad
excited.
Pitt no,
but
the, at his the, best.
There, Stephen there Graham.
There is a huge difference between so there's less of a difference between Blu-ray and 4K frankly than you would think, but that's mostly because I'm
that's
because
your
TV
is up converting,
right? The TV is up converting, and also my like PlayStation 5 is up converting, so like everything is like juicing the image, and it's very very close to 4K. For instance, we're going to talk about Mulholland Drive in the bonus episode, I am not upgrading Mulholland Drive from my Criterion Blu-ray to the Criterion 4K.
Okay, you're crazy.
Set, which is the reason that we're
you're crazy. You should do that.
No, it's not worth it. It's just not worth it.
I have a technical question, Sonny, for you to ask our buddy Tony.
Sure.
In the chain of up conversions, if you have a 4K DVD player, 4K Blu-ray player, like your PS5, plugged into your very nice OLED.
Yes.
Do you have two processing up conversions happening? Do you have one and it's the first one, or one it's the last one, or one it's just whatever processor?
Where is the button better? for the subtitles here? Because I have, was that, what language was that just now?
Yeah. Sorry. So I'm just going to ignore that. So I actually don't know what the answer to this is, and I'm kind of curious.
Tony would know.
My belief, my understanding is that the PlayStation 5 is doing the actual job of the up conversion, and that the TV is just displaying what the PS5 sends it. But I'm not 100% sure on that. I do not know that for sure. So I should probably email him and ask. We could get actual information for folks.
All right.
But so anyway, I am currently just like accumulating movies that I will never watch again. This is not the first time this has happened.
And you'll know that you could watch them.
I could watch them at any time that I want.
And that you own them.
So they'll always be there.
Jeff Bezos can't take them away from you.
They will always be there.
So. Victorino, how are you, buddy?
I'm tired. Tired and I'm exhausted. I am proofreading our friend Matt Continetti's upcoming book in the spring on the history of American conservatism.
Hey!
And so that has gotten me, you know, to actually like really this is a big book. It's more than 400 pages. So I hope he enjoys getting this done in 2024.
How can you possibly finish this before its publication proof
it.
Date?
Yes, you couldn't even read it in that amount of time.
Read it. I can't even proof it. When I'm getting paid, I'm reading it. I really am. So then I actually work hard and I'm alert and I'm awake and I do this whole thing. But I would say I'm getting to the point in the story where we are now talking about basically friends of ours, especially yours and mine, JVL.
These are all like Arnold Beichman.
People who are slightly older. So I was thinking more like Michael Novak, obviously Irving and Norman. Yeah. But then you get into Frum and you get to all these other people. And I just wish I read this book when I was 22 instead of 48. Oh, so that's what he did, you know? And because there's just so much of a backstory to so many of these people leading up
to this
the
guy,
present.
Irving Kristol.
I know. I mean, look, amazing. Obviously I knew, but it's weird because
Norman Podhoritz.
We knew them. I met Norman and Midge, you know, and it reminded me of a dinner I had at Jody Bottoms, one of his salons. And the one that I was at was with Claudia and also Michael Novak and his wife and Irving and B. Kristol. And it's like, I wish, knowing what I know now, back when I was in my early 20s, I wish I was able to ask better questions than, you know, pass the potatoes, please. Can you? Sorry. Anyway, did you ever go to one of those JVL?
I don't think we overlapped.
We were on separate ones. So I was only invited once.
Same. Mine was Claudia.
Yes. So she was a regular.
Claudia was a regular over there. I think it's just because she could smoke unrepentantly.
Yes, smoke cigarettes.
And smoke Galois too.
Yeah, totally.
I forget who else was there. It was the summer that my sister was living with me while she was in college and interning at ABC News. And so I brought my sister. And it was I would say my sister, who was like a college junior, was just what is this?
Well, good. I'm glad I can relate to your sister to that. Yeah.
I will say this, though. So one of the parts of the job that I really enjoyed back in the day, you know, when we were 22, 25, 27, was learning about all of these guys who came before us. And not came before us in the Matt Labash, Tucker Carlson sense. They weren't our near peers. Mm-hmm. And they weren't even the Bill and Fred and John peers. But the generation ahead of that, right?
Yes.
The old bulls. Yeah. And I liked learning about that. Honestly, I've learned about those people primarily through the back of the book. because we always have those guys would write for the back of the book.
Yes,
and we would have things about them. They wrote Harvey Clare. You wondered where they
Charles Kessler or whoever. You wondered where they came from, but you just because we met them at that moment and not knowing back what they were doing in the 60s, in the 70s.
Right, like with the Whitaker Chamber stuff, right? Or like these are people who are like involved with Nixon,
right,
McCarthy,
Nixon, Reagan,
and all the old Red Scare stuff. I get the sense that the kids today not only don't know anything about people like us, but couldn't fucking care less. The idea about like learning about your elders.
Yeah. I wonder if
sorry, dude.
To do with, you know,
I got 250,000 followers
right,
on TikTok.
It's all about
fuck
it's,
you.
It's about influencers now and things like that. It's different, and I wonder how much of it's because print is dead per se versus when we were around at the tail end of that. But
well, this is I mean, this is the thing, right? This is why the French Dispatch will never make sense to a certain generation of viewer. You know, as we talked about a couple of weeks back, I know exactly what you're talking about, JBL, because I was like, I am kind of the same way, except like Vic, I kind of did it after, I did it a little bit later, like reading Norman Podhoretz's Making It, and like, just like going through those like old collections of commentary and Dissent magazine,
Public
and
Interest
stuff like Public
Interest,
and,
National
like
interest.
It just like going through all of that stuff was just like really interesting to read and kind of watch and track how people evolved. But yeah, no, like I do not get the sense that there's a whole lot of like nostalgia for like the rugged intellectual combat of 1950s New York.
Right.
You know,
I don't
think that's a thing anymore.
Or even 2000s Washington.
Oh, forget. Oh, yeah. Well, I can't. I can't wait to get to that part of the book because then, you know, we'll see, you know, more of our.
I am interested to know if I make the book.
You have to go quick. Go to the index. Go to the index.
That's all that really matters.
Classic DC.
As you know, that's what we do. It's so funny that, you know, I just wish that. If I knew this back then, I could be like Matt instead of being me.
That he would ask you to proof it.
Oh,
that's a big.
Oh,
big
and I'm finding stuff.
Oh, that
and
is
I'm
an honor.
Stuff, and I'm finding stuff. So you know, I'm doing.
Do you remember
my thing.
The two people I trusted my book with? There were only two people that I trusted it to.
Yes,
both friends of ours.
Andy.
Adam Kuyper.
Oh, well, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And Emily McLean.
Oh, sure. She's the best.
Those were the two. And I just was like,
that's right.
They're the only two people that I felt comfortable putting my life in my hands with. Because that's what you're doing when you hand your book over to be proofed or edited or fact checked to somebody else.
I'm just proofing. I'm not trying to
it's
move
not like
anything
an,
around.
It's not like an article. You know, like it's there for forever.
No,
your
that's
kids
right.
will
that's
have
right.
it.
Yeah, that's so, right. That's what it
that's
is.
That's a very nice thing that Matt did.
Yes,
that's a sign of love.
I'm honored. I'm honored. And it's so funny you mentioned Whitaker Chambers because that's like on my list. I'd love to read that book, Witness. Although
Witnesses, you know what? So I only read it like 10 years ago.
Uh-huh.
It is fucking amazing.
I hope it's a short book.
Well, I would say on the quadrants, it gets hit a little bit on length.
It might take me, I guess you could say, an eternity to read it. Speaking of which, over the weekend, Eternals remained at the top of the box office with a whopping $26.9 million, followed by Clifford, the Big Red Dog, with $16.6 million, and Dune in third place with $5.5 million. Box office thoughts, not a bad drop-off, right, Sonny?
Yeah, 62%. That's not terrible.
I'm shocked it was that small.
It's not a great hold for a Marvel movie, for sure. But it's also, you know, it's not the worst. We were joking that the cinema score on this is a B, which is the same cinema score that Batman vs Superman: Dawn of Justice got. That movie dropped 69% first to second weekend.
And that's the before times. You know,
and that was before times. Granted, it was also dropping from a much higher. level. I mean, the number there was much bigger. So I don't know. I mean, it's fine. Clifford is kind of an interesting number because not only did it do, what was the number?
16. That is 16.6.
Yeah, not only did it do that, it also supposedly goosed 1 million signups for Paramount Plus. So, like, that's kind of a more interesting number, I think, for Paramount.
The Mountain.
CBS. Paramount Plus.
Come climb the mountain.
That's right. Those commercials are so confusing.
It's real.
Is Clifford, what is that? Is that like a sort of a computer animated?
It's live action. It's live action with a big, big red dog that's computer generated.
Actually, Christopher Nolan is going to direct the sequel, but right now he's in the middle of genetically engineering.
He's got to do that.
A 30-foot tall red dog.
Well, I would watch it. It would be pleasing.
He's trying multiple things. He's also dyed a cow red. He's dyed a giant bull red, and he's trying to teach it to act like a dog. So we're gonna see how that works. First.
Now, obviously,
I took the kids actually to see Clifford. The whole family went to the Draft House. We watched Clifford the Big Red Dog.
Did you think?
It's a movie.
You know how we have
it's a motion picture.
I don't know if listeners know this because we do have the bonus episode strictly for subscribers, which is pretty hot stuff, especially the one coming up. But we also do Sub Beacon for Kids, and that's a separate one, and that's where we only talk about kids shows. You'll have to sign up.
So anyway, it was fine. Okay. I mean, it's a kid's movie. Charlie was less interested in this than he was in Paw Patrol.
Less identifiable with people he knows and things he knows.
But my 6-year-old daughter, very into it, some tears when the big red dog was in trouble. You know,
when Clifford
dies. Was moving. She was moved by it. So successful outing at the theater. So the big question here is how much money did Red Notice make?
Yes.
I know this.
Because as you know, this is the movie we're talking about this week, and it's not in theaters, but according to Netflix, I think if it would have made hundreds of millions of dollars.
It was viewed for 160 million hours across the world.
I'll break this down. What's happening here?
I don't know. So so Netflix has changed its data again. They used to count accounts that had viewed a program for at least 2 minutes. So Extraction, for instance, the Chris Hemsworth movie.
Does that count trailers? Because most trailers are 2 minutes and 30 2 minutes and 30 seconds long.
Made by and produced by the Russo brothers. The number that Netflix said was that 99 million accounts watched it for at least 2 minutes.
Yes. And people still talk about Extraction. I mean, it's part of the culture.
People talk about Extraction all the time.
It's a touchstone.
So I
see kids with Extraction lunch boxes at school all the time.
A couple months back, Netflix released not only the number of accounts, but also the hours watched, the hours of a program that were watched. So the top 10 films of all time was Extraction was number one with 99 million accounts had watched for at least 2 minutes. Bird Box was watched by 89 million accounts for at least 2 minutes. Spencer Confidential, 600, blah, blah, blah. Extraction was watched for 231 million total hours, and that was actually number two. Bird Box did better with 282 million view hours. So they released these two things a couple months ago, but they've changed it now. They're no longer releasing the number of accounts. They're saying instead they're releasing the total hours. And the total hours of Red Notice was like 150 million hours, something like that, which is a huge, huge number. In theory, 150 million hours. I mean, I don't know if that means right. You know, 75 million accounts.
Right, exactly.
Watched the whole 2 hour thing. I don't know if 100 million accounts watched an hour of it, and then like another 50 million accounts watched whatever. I don't know. The point is, I don't know, and nobody really knows. So it's not super useful.
But they get the claim victory.
they get to claim victory. They get to say, look, what do we have here? We've got, we have the most watched show, and we have the most watched movie in history for us. We spent $200 million getting Dwayne Johnson and Gal Gadot and Ryan Reynolds in the same room together, and we made a movie. We made a movie, and people watched it.
But important to note here, Netflix doesn't have any bombs or flops. They are unique among the studios in that because their system is so opaque, nobody has any idea when they spend $50 million on a movie which is watched by five people.
Right. So they have internal metrics. And one of the interesting things about the Dave Chappelle fight recently was that they released somebody leaked information about what Netflix considers to be a value add for the network. So like Squid Game, because it was very cheap, it only cost like $20 million to make.
What?
And because it was, yeah, like the whole thing was like $25 million or something.
Well, they were able to get that beautiful North Korean actress, and she did the whole thing for $12.
Right. Well, I mean, that's basically everybody.
No one
everybody.
Can see me laughing. Everyone sorry, I'm, Korea, I'm doing the silent Korea. Laugh. But I just thought it was so expensive. That island, it must have cost a lot to build the
you
got, thing.
You don't,
the
well, island. There are a lot of islands in Korea. They're very cheap. So that movie costs like $25 million to make, and it's been watched for 2 billion hours or something. So like Netflix has internal numbers that says, all right, it costs this much. This many number of people watched it. It probably drove this many signups. We're going to say it has a net plus to us of like 28 points or some nonsense, whatever their
war is the Netflix version of wins above replacement.
Exactly. It's their war. And the Chappelle special had like a war of -1. It was like basically break even for them. Lots of people watched it. But not a ton of people. And it's very expensive, too, for just 1 hour of content, like because he is just a very expensive acquisition for them. Yeah. So, you know, they have internal things, but they don't really talk about that at all. What they do is they just throw out raw data that's like, here's 150 million hours people watched worth of Red Notice. So that's a big hit for us. That's a big win. You know, it's probably going to do about the way that the numbers break down, it'll probably do about 300 million hours over its first 28 days, which is, again, will be like their record for a movie. But it's nothing compared to the TV shows. It's nothing compared to, again, Squid Games, which worldwide has done something like 2 billion, more than 2 billion hours viewed. So I don't know. I mean, like, you know, the real question is, Is it a success for Netflix because it got people to stay in from theaters for a weekend? Or is it a success for Netflix because it's just something people turned on because they were going to be staying at home anyway? And I saw one of the box office wonks, you know, joking about how this would have been a $25 million opening, probably. This movie would have opened at about $25 million with those actors and in this environment.
Or in the old days.
I think $25 million is probably about right. That's around Free Guy. I think that's about the number that I could see this doing. And it would gross maybe $100 million domestic. I mean, this is not a movie that would do very well because it's not well reviewed. People seem to like it. The numbers are okay. But it is, look, this is what I wrote in my review. I wrote that this is a movie that's going to be watched by 100 million people. And a month from now, none of those people are going to remember anything that happens in it. It's the most generic movie-like product I've ever seen.
Hard disagree.
Sonny, why don't you, before we get into that, how about a little bit of a big boy review there?
All right. So, this movie is about, this art thief, Nolan Booth, who is being tracked by an FBI profiler named John Hartley. Nolan Booth is, Ryan Reynolds. Dwayne Johnson plays the FBI profiler. And a second art thief named the Bishop, played by Gal Gadot, is trying to, play them off of each other because she is trying to, and also Nolan Booth is trying to gather the three Cleopatra's eggs together, which are a made-up thing that doesn't exist in the real world. But
or
in
are
this,
they?
In this movie, they exist. They're the MacGuffins, and we know they're the MacGuffins because at one point Ryan Reynolds very snarkily says, "Oh, I'm looking for a box that should be labeled MacGuffin," because you get it. It's a movie. We're watching a movie. I hate this movie so much. Anyway, it's a classic two-hander with Ryan Reynolds and
the old Rich
Dwayne Johnson. Trying to do action comedy. It's like a mashup of The Sting and Raiders of the Lost Ark. There's lots of double crosses. There's lots of treasure. There's lots of whimsy. Here's the thing. There's nothing approaching an interesting visual idea in this movie. There's nothing approaching an interesting visual shot. I actually saw this in theaters. I saw it in theaters because I wanted to review it before it came out on Netflix. It is playing in a handful of theaters.
Oh.
And I found myself longing for the trailer for the Michael Bay movie, Ambulance, that played in front of this movie, because at least that has, like, interesting visual stuff going on. It's like, kind of interesting to watch. And this just has none of that. It has none of that. It's very boring. It's not funny. I like Ryan Reynolds' kind of smarmy thing, but it's not exactly tight comedy. It's very personality-driven and personality-based. Dwayne Johnson is fine in this. Gal Gadot is pretty. That's it. I mean, like, that's the movie. It's a movie that's driven by star power, and like, these guys are fine, but the script by Marshall Thurber, whatever his fucking name is nonsense. It's competent nonsense. Here's the other thing about this movie.
It's actually
very, very competently made. Yeah. I was never confused by what was happening on the screen. I was never surprised by any of the like visual stuff. I was like, okay, this all makes sense spatially and geographically. Like, it's fine. It's competent mediocrity. It is like the perfect Netflix original. I found myself wishing I was sitting at home folding socks while I was watching it instead of in a theater, because this is just what I do when I watch Netflix movies.
Wow.
So
Netflix for next Netflix movies versus quote real movies. JVL, you said hard disagree, please.
Here's the thing. I suspect that maybe Sunny and I are 80% in agreement of this. But Vic, as always, can we go to the man of the people first?
Oh. Well, the plot, I gave it a C.
What?
Just totally.
You couldn't figure it out?
No, I just.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you give Mulholland Drive.
Oh, man. It just was so, ugh. I just wasn't interested in the plot. Eggs. How about Shankara stones? Why don't we just do that? Was it obvious to you, spoiler alert, that Gal...
Spoilers. We're gonna be talking about all the double crosses in this movie.
That Gal Gadot and The Rock were together. Were you watching this from the beginning? Saying, oh, they're obviously a pair. I assumed that you guys were way ahead of me on that one.
I did not think that, because I don't envision The Rock as a sexual person in any way. He's basically a eunuch. I did know in the first like 10 minutes of the movie that he was obviously an art thief and not an FBI profiler, right? Because there's literally a line of dialogue where he says, like, sarcastically, like, "I'm the villain." Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, we're going to flash back to this in the big reveal, and then we're going to find out that he actually is the villain here. It turns out, it's exactly
kind
what they did.
Ish.
I mean, it's like,
they're all
villains. It's the most basic screenwriting bullshit in the entire world.
Okay, duration is a C. This was a long movie. Action involved.
It isn't, though.
It felt like an hour 50 minutes. Did it feel short to you, Sonny?
No, it didn't feel short.
No, it did not.
Did not feel
short.
Like a short movie. Oh. But it is not a long movie. It's an hour and 50
minutes.
That's
a bad sign. Action, violence, B. I give it a B. I don't even give it an A, because I'm so tired of the CGI. All they're doing is going from green screen to green screen. The hell, everything's CGI. It was just a whole thing. I just found it to be completely uninteresting. Sex, nudity.
What about sex and nudity?
I'll give that C, because there obviously wasn't any. What is this, PG-13?
Yeah.
Yeah. But she does look great. There was nothing going on with her, though. I mean, she's just
Inspector
wearing
Inspector Doss?
Oh, I liked her too. She's interesting. I needed to know more about her, but didn't see enough of her. And she's sort of like on the trail. But again, I just, okay. So when you break it down for me, on the pro side, a couple chuckles, you know, but mostly cons, right? I didn't find the story.
Name a joke. Remind me of a joke in this movie. I want a line of dialogue that was actual humor from this movie.
They're talking about how terrible their fathers are. Ryan Reynolds says, "It's a miracle we're not both strippers." It's fucking fantastic.
All right.
I'll give you another amazing joke. I'll give you another amazing joke in this. So the whole setup is that there's this incredibly wealthy Egyptian billionaire, and he is the one who is paying $300 million for these eggs because he wants to give them to his daughter, whose name is Cleopatra, as a wedding gift. And when we get to the over-the-top party, which is almost...
This isn't funny. I know what you're going to say. It's not funny.
That she looks and oohs and ahs over the eggs for less than 5 seconds, and then when some guy from Game of Thrones does a musical appearance, she leaves them in a heartbeat to try to get with him.
Ed Sheeran.
I have no idea who he is. I've never seen this guy before.
But
the fact
love
that she leaves the priceless eggs and grabs her phone to try to get a selfie with him is hysterical.
It's basic. It's basic.
Okay, so I just found it very derivative. And like, there's all these jokes about Indiana Jones, and the chemistry's fine. I'm tired of the Ryan Reynolds snark. It's like watching Deadpool 3 or something. Although I like the reference, as a drinks person, to aviation gin. I assume you caught the bottle that he poured. It did not have the label. It was turned around, but that's clearly aviation because I have aviation gin.
Well, it was interesting to me that they did turn around the bottle. I was actually kind of surprised by that. He doesn't have it in his contract.
Yes. Yeah.
That he gets to I don't know. I was surprised by that. So it's like whenever you see a bottle of Singani pop up
Their basic protocol is if we're not getting paid, you don't get to see the label.
It's funny how that works, not the other way.
But I mean, I am surprised that Ryan Reynolds and his people didn't like work that into the actual contract.
Right, because everything else,
like anytime he's drinking on screen, it has to be aviation gin.
JVL, why did you love this movie so much?
So here's the thing, I loved it. I thought it was sensational. The another great joke. You're talking about the don't move because the bull senses motion. He says, "You're thinking of Jurassic Park."
The CGI bull.
He says, "No, it was David Attenborough." There, I saw this in a documentary. He says, "I think you're thinking of Richard Attenborough."
All right, I'll give you that. That was
a bunch of references. It's just a bunch of references to other things.
Very funny references.
They're not.
And
they're not funny.
So here's the thing, though. I thought the script was 90% great. The chemistry of the three leads was off the charts movie star stuff.
I cannot believe what I'm
hearing. I have never... I like Gal Gadot.
I cannot believe it.
I like Gal Gadot.
I like her a lot.
Just fine.
I like her a lot. But...
I like her more than just fine. I like her a lot. I've never seen her have this much fun on screen. Gal Gadot was having a great time, and it was infectious, and it was great. Here's the problem. So... There is a third act problem. The final 20 minutes of the movie suck. So it does not stick the landing at all. However, this is a movie in which it looks like they spent about $150 million on salary for the three leads and then $7 million on everything else.
Yes.
Because the movie looks...
Including the bull.
...not like a movie. It looks like the Made for USA... series, The Librarian, starring Noah Wiley.
100%.
And that is true at the level of the score, which sounds like it's generic, you know, clip audio from SoundCloud that they have downloaded. It's true of the way it's shot. It's true of the fact that every location seems to be a green screen.
Yes.
Well, they shot it during the pandemic.
It is so horrible looking.
They shot a lot of it during the pandemic. So a lot of it was done, like, essentially without crowds. They were trying to do, you know.
I am here to tell you that if this was 2018 and this had been shot by a real studio as a real movie, then this film would have been pushed into the summer. it would have been like a June opening, and it would have been like Jumanji, one of these quiet, like, hey, you know what? Sony really thinks they have something here, but nobody's seen anything about this. They've got these three stars. And it would have opened to $100 million. It would have had an A++ cinema score, and we would all be getting one of these sequels every 4 years until they had sucked everything dry from it, because this would be like Rush Hour. The buddy cop action comedy is one of the great genres. And had this been a real movie back in the before times, done by a real studio and not Netflix, with the same script but another couple write-throughs on it and filmed like an actual movie, this would have been like Shanghai Noon or Rush Hour 2, or Lethal Weapon.
I just want to highlight here that basically what you have just said is that if this was a different, better movie, it would have been a better movie. And I agree with that.
Yes, I told you. I think we basically agree.
If this movie had a better script, and if this movie was directed...
I said we agree on 80%.
If this movie were not this movie...
If this movie had a third act that worked, if this movie didn't hang its hat on a fucking Ed Sheeran joke, did you see Netflix trying to make this a thing on Twitter? They were trying to meme it on Twitter, where there's a line in the movie where Ed Sheeran's like, "Don't you know who I am? I'm Ed Sheeran, bitch." And it was like, that's sad. It's sad that this is in the movie.
That's not
it's
the
pathetic.
Funny thing. The but funny it, thing.
But that's what they tried to make it as the funny thing.
That's a great Ed Sheeran impression, Sonny.
So I have never seen Ed Sheeran before. I had no idea who he was. The funny
he's a very
part,
famous
he's
a musician.
Big, I don't listen to his music, but he's
a
big
very funny famous part.
The joke is that the only thing that he would mention is Game of Thrones, which is a little cameo he made, but the fact that is.
But, oh no, the real joke is that she grabs her phone and doesn't give a shit about the eggs.
Yeah, I got that.
This is hysterical.
It's very funny.
Again, as I said when I began this, Sonny, you and I are 80% in alignment. You could say this about
90% of movies.
No, but
this was not shot to be a better movie.
No, this is the problem.
This movie was better scripted. It'd be a better movie.
It was not. It's not a movie. This is the fundamental. Content. So had this been a movie and not content, then we would have been talking about it the way we do Rush Hour 2 or Shanghai Noon, or as I said, Lethal Weapon, right? Or Lethal Weapon 2, right? I mean, this is these great buddy cop action comedies become touchstones, right? They're things that everybody loves, things that everybody stops to watch when they're on TNT. And this was this close to being one of those movies. And instead, Netflix turned it into fucking content. And the difference between content and movies is that movies matter and content doesn't. And maybe Netflix is right. The content is, content greater sign movies. That, who needs movies? You could just do content. And content pays for itself. And, it's like the people in media were like, oh, we need long-form reporting. But the problem is to do long-form reporting, you got to pay a couple of reporters a living wage to work for 2 months and only publish one thing. Whereas you can hire a 22-year-old to write 15 takes a day while just rewriting breaking news on other places and get lots and lots of clicks.
But even as content, you loved this content.
I've loved it qua content, meaning for what is on Netflix, this is the best Netflix original I have ever seen. And it is still content.
You need to watch Stranger Things.
Well, it's not a movie.
It's like the first season. Yeah, it's true.
It's not a movie, though. This is the best Netflix movie I've ever seen, and that's because of the movie star-like quality of the three, their chemistry on screen, and the pretty good stuff. But you know what? This is, again, not to tease out the bonus show, but watching this, which is, Red Notice again, like somebody had taken a Shane Black script and just like fucked up the last 10 pages, but then handed it to the same team that did Burn Notice and said, shoot this for USA Network. Watching that, and then also watching David Lynch's Mulholland Drive, just hammers home the idea that cinema as art is gone. It is gone, and that is a fucking tragedy.
You know what?
Tragedy.
It was gone in Mulholland Drive too.
That is a fucking tragedy. There.
We'll talk more about Mulholland Drive in the bonus. I am I disagree with you. I disagree with you that Netflix has not made better originals than this. But the trick is all of the better originals have been made by like actual great filmmakers who they have just given the keys to. So I didn't care for Roma, but it's better than the Irishman. A lot of people recognize
there are parts of the Irishman I like, except for the CGI. Senior citizen Robert De Niro pretending to be young Robert De Niro in his 20s.
Very creepy.
Made me nuts.
Very creepy.
But the middle, once they can just be their old selves.
But like Ballad of Buster Scruggs, the Coen Brothers movie, they've had some good original stuff. But yeah, I agree with you that like most of it is just it's just content. It's just this is why I still think it's very weird that Netflix wants to be in the film business as opposed to the TV business, because TV is where they actually capture the hours and hours of eyeballs. And the only reason to be in the film business is because you want to get the prestige of being associated with a Ryan Reynolds, Dwayne Johnson, Gal Gadot production.
No, I think the reason is because you have to drive the other studios out of business so that you are the only creator of content. It's predatory capitalism. It's not because they're making money of that. It's because they, in order for Netflix to justify its stock price, it has to be a monopolist. Even in a duopoly, even if it's just Netflix and Disney Plus, the Netflix stock price does not make sense.
Yeah.
Right. Well, that's why.
I mean, this is why they're spending, you know, $18 billion a year on content or whatever.
Question. How do they travel from city to city so quickly? How did they get to the jungles? How did they get to Argentina?
But doesn't
Stop.
That
do not question
doesn't that green screen
movie.
Work? And here's the other thing. Look, I am not a child. I understand that most movies do green screens now. It is, you know, not everybody is
Zodiac, which I loved.
Not everybody is out there with Frankie Ford Coppola in the jungles shooting on location. This looked so bad.
The jungle scene looked like it was like from the Dora the Explorer movie. Not that I've seen it, but you know, that
sort of
feel to
it. It looked like it was from Indiana Jones 4.
Yeah, that's
right. Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. Remember the jungle scenes in that one?
Our buddy Matt Robarts emailed me to ask, what is it that happens that the CGI work now looks worse than CGI work from 5 years ago?
Yes.
And the only thing I can think of is that it's now optimized for smaller screens, so you can just spend less money on it. Right? Like, look, nobody's seeing this 30 feet tall. Everybody's watching it on their phones. So just make it look good enough for the phone.
So if you do see it on a big TV, then it's awful.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this in a theater.
It must have been horrifying.
I was like, this looks, I mean, it looks like somebody made this at home on a MacBook Pro. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But again, I laughed out loud, and this is the role Gal Gadot was born to play. She has so much fun. It's great. I haven't seen her have this much fun since she did the fish out of water stuff in London at the very beginning of Wonder Woman 2, in the second act of Wonder Woman 2. The second act of the first Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And she's just great. Like, she's legit great in this. When she starts singing Downtown, and I don't just mean, like, super hot. She's fantastically funny. I love her.
Sonny. You took your headphones off. What?
There's an actual good movie that's out in theaters right now called Last Night in Soho that uses the song Downtown to much greater effect. Seek that out. Don't watch fucking Burn Red Notice.
I like Gal Gadot even in that date night movie with Steve Carell. She has a cameo with Mark Wahlberg, and she's on screen for only a couple minutes. Amazing.
Victorino, what did you think about that swimsuit in the final scene?
Yeah, she's great. That's right. I love it. I would like
that
more.
Swimsuit was not a special effect.
I would have liked
but
more.
But boy, howdy.
Okay. That's
she's
all.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Corrections, shout outs, anything?
I had a correction.
Oh.
I said we're 3 weeks away from, 3 years away from Ambush Bug. Ambush Bug is DC. I realized that as soon as we finished taping. It's not a Marvel movie. That's all. And I have a, I have a Spirit of the Week.
Oh, wow.
It is Christmas time, which means that Hardywood has their gingerbread stout. Hardywood, a brewery in Richmond, Virginia. It's the only thing good local to ever come out of the Confederacy. Their gingerbread stout is amazing. And as I have found, you have this gingerbread stout with a chocolate chip cookie. Oh, boy.
It sounds like
it's like a Gal Gadot in your mouth.
It's like Gal Gadot in your mouth.
And that is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at Sonny Bunch, at Victory Nematis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time. What do you got? You got anything?
Vic, did you have any drinks before the show?
I didn't, but I keep it slurry. I've been slurry today. Have you noticed this?
I'm a little slurry. Do you need to maybe...
I might be having a stroke.
Is your left arm okay?
Can you feel everything in the extremities? I guess it's fine.
Fingers?
I don't feel it at all. It's kind of numb.
I just wanted to check. I just wanted to check because that Patreon shout out there at the end.
Wasn't sure. Yes, I don't know. Does anyone else smell the almonds, the bitter almonds? Do you smell that? Okay. No?
All right. Do we need to text Kate?
Right here on the show. I'm doing this for the ratings.
I'm sure it's fine.